This is the Gas House Gang on 104.1 FM KMOX.
Sponsored by Saligi Heating and Cooling, a Daikin Comfort dealer. And by Overhead Door Company of St. Louis, Chesterfield Fence and Deck, and Budweiser.
Now, the Gas House Gang on KMOX.
Two strikes, two outs. Tying run at third base. O'Brien, the pitch. Swing and a miss. He struck him out. Save number three for Riley O'Brien. And the Cardinals win a terrific game here at Nationals Park in Washington to even the series. They win it in 10 by a score of 7-6.
I'll tell you what, this team, I mean, this season, if that's the way it's going to be, get ready. Put on your seatbelt. I mean, this is going to be, buckle your safety belt. This is going to be some season. Up and down and crazy twists and turns and comebacks. What are they trying to do to us? Entertain us. That's what they're trying to do.
Buckle your safety belts.
I like this team.
What are you, 100?
This team's fun.
Man, well, yeah, so far they've been a lot of fun. And I couldn't be happier with the season start because, look, I mean, we have talked a million times about what we expected them to be going in and how those expectations for the outcome of the season in terms of wins and losses, it's not high because this is a growth year. But, man, it is really difficult to not take this 6-5 start and be very pleased with it.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm half 100. I'm 50. There is a commenter here on one of my tweets yesterday who said, I don't know how old he is, but he said, this team is refreshing.
Yeah.
And I was still enjoying the game when down 5-2. He said, amazing the difference when not watching stale vets trying to go 84-78. Pointless to have Hall of Famers or former All-Stars. Does nothing to help winning. I am enjoying every game.
There it is. Nailed it.
Yeah.
Because this season is about the young players and it's about looking ahead to the future. And it feels for the first time in a long time that the Cardinals actually do have a future. Much of that future has not been written and it is not certain. We don't know what the team really is going to look like 2 years from now. We have an idea of a couple of guys who will be here, but we don't know what this building process will, how it's going to look by 2028. We don't know yet, but we do know that it really just does feel like there is something coming and something promising that is happening now. And it's the first time in years that it's felt that way.
Yeah, it feels good. Amy and Lauren are both checking in. They're enjoying themselves and what this team is doing. The real third man, he says, greetings. Crooks in the lineup Friday, batting seventh. Make it so. I can't wave the magic wand for you there, third man, but I can give you some good news. The Traject Arc is in play with the Cardinals. I saw it for myself at spring training. They have it. They use it. That was his big question.
Is this the guy that was, yeah, okay.
So there you go. I can give you that news. I'll also give you some other news. You take it however you want it, but the pitcher the Cardinals are facing today is Miles Michaelis.
Oof. And you know what? He's looked rough. Really had a rough go of it this season. He has given up the most home runs in baseball so far. It's only a couple of starts, but still, ERA's almost 15. I mean, he's having a miserable start to the season. So for the Cardinals today, it's get on the board early and dominate from the beginning.
The E-line says the resilient Redbirds. Not bad. We need a nickname. We need a nickname for this team. If we can come up with a nickname, that'd be great. Cardiac Cards is taken. That was the football Cardinals did that. So you can't go Cardiac Cards. Baby Birds is good.
Yeah.
I've been using that one a little bit here and there. I think, you know, people, that's a pretty easy one to go with. Jordan Walker's in the lineup batting fourth against Michaelis. So we did have a listener yesterday ask Ollie. I didn't put it up on the screen, but he saw all the comments. So maybe he took that into consideration. But I think you ride the hot hand of Jordan Walker. Guy's on fire. He's got 4 home runs, 11 RBIs. He's hitting 300. His OPS is 1014. And he's going to be facing Miles Michaelis today, and he's going to get himself a tasty pitch right down the middle if he waits for it.
Buddy, I can't fully describe to you how happy I am to see Jordan Walker doing what he's doing right now. Is he going to be a 1,000 OPS guy for the season? No. No, that's not going to be him. But if you can give me an 800, give me 800, hit some home runs this year. Give me a reasonable batting average and get on base at a decent clip. Man, I will be so happy with that, because we cannot overstate how young he still is and how much baseball is left in that guy, or should be. And if he has a year, and we talked about this on the earlier show today, if Jordan Walker has a first good couple of months of the season and then maybe struggles in June or July or something, and then, you know, comes back strong again in August and September, that is going to be a massive victory. A massive victory for the Cardinals. And I want to see that confidence in him continue to grow. And right now it looks like he looks like he feels confident in his game plan and what he's doing, and the results are happening. Again, not going to be a 1,000 OPS guy probably, but if he's around 800 or better, I will consider this a really successful year for him.
Matt says the Rockin' Redbirds play loud. Not Matt Pajeski, but our viewer, Matt, on YouTube. RNB says the Comeback Cardinals. I like them all. These are all good. Work. These are all really good. By the way, if you want to join the crew, you can follow us on Facebook, on X, and on YouTube. And it's KMOX Sports, but we're on YouTube. Two different channels, right, Matt?
Is that right?
We're on KMOX News YouTube as well.
Oh, great.
So we're growing this thing like crazy. We're obviously on KMOX. Most of you are listening to us on 104.1 FM or 1120 AM, or perhaps on the Odyssey app. That's how I listen. I ask Alexa or Google to play KMOX, and they just play it right there in kitchen or in the living room.
Yeah, do you know that they could? I don't know if people realize that. You can say, hey, Alexa, play KMOX. Yeah.
We have the Google, I forget what
Google
it's called.
Google Home?
Yeah, and I say, hey, Google, play KMOX. And boom, KMOX is on, and I'm making dinner.
It's great.
I love it. Yeah, it's good stuff. This is Lauren expands her thought and says, no matter if we're down in any part of the game, we can at least come back and make it a game, no matter if we win or lose. I'm excited for all the games. Going to try and hopefully watch them all, because no matter what, this team is entertaining and fun to watch. I'm going to take it a step further, Lauren. I'm not asking you to spend money, but I'm asking our listeners, circle a date on the calendar and go see them at Busch Stadium. Okay, just do one. And if you don't have fun, let me know. And
then what are you going to do?
And well, then I'm going to say, okay, you didn't have fun. So then we're going to talk about it. And I want you to tell me what didn't go right for you at Busch Stadium. Was it the prices? Was it the traffic? Was it, because I can tell you, the traffic's not an issue right now. And there are short lines to get a beer and go use the bathroom, and you can be right back.
Could drive a boat to Busch.
Now, when that place starts getting packed, things are going to change a little bit. But I go check them out. I can't believe I'm saying it, but we are at that point in this era right now where we've seen some empty seats. Okay, now this weekend the Boston Red Sox are coming in, so that's going to be bigger crowds.
Get a little bump. They're struggling.
They are. Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, the Cleveland Guardians will be here. I would go so far as to say it will be very lightly attended for those three,
which is crazy because Cleveland's a better team.
Yes, they are.
They're actually a better team on the field than Boston is, but you'll get more people for the Red Sox series. Part of it is a weekend, but still there's a draw the Red Sox have.
Yeah, well, how about this? The Mets have a bigger name and a bigger draw and are probably better than the Tampa Bay Rays are, but it was opening weekend and it was warm. The Mets came in, it was cold, and nobody went.
Right.
So, you know, things are a little different right now around Cardinal Nation, but that's okay. I mean, we see the audience here. We see the audience on TV is going to grow, and we know that everybody's out there.
Well, so, people care.
Yeah.
People care about the team. And that's when we talk about the state of a franchise and how well they're doing, even if they're losing, the thing that you have to be, people will complain when the team is not playing well, and they'll be loud, and they'll let the organization know how they feel. And if you're an organization that's hearing it from the fan base and you're like, hey, I don't want to hear it. I don't want to hear these people criticizing us. That's not when you worry.
Yeah.
The time when you worry is people, when they've checked out, they don't care. They don't watch your team play. They're not talking about your team. They're not listening to the games on the radio. They're not listening to talk radio, talk about the team. That's when you worry about it. And Cardinals fans are anything but apathetic, even though they have not had a good last couple of seasons and missed out on the playoffs. It's been a while since they've been there. People still care very much.
Yeah, it's pretty fun. It really is. I can hear people buzzing about it, and we're talking about from CEOs of companies through everybody in town, that whether you're influential or whether you are a fan forever and you want to just get in there and go see the game, you know, people are spreading the word to their friends, to their coworkers about the Cardinals. I think it's pretty cool that they are going to make a comeback, and the team is entertaining. It is much more entertaining than last year's team.
I really hope this keeps up, because this has been, it's been an enjoyable first 2 weeks of the season.
This is such a great baseball town. We have such tradition here. I don't know that people realize that Rawlings is headquartered here. Now, people from out of town definitely don't know that. I think people in St. Louis, maybe you know that. But if you've ever driven past Westport, there is a giant gold glove on top of that gold building in Westport, which is housing the Rawlings headquarters and also the Rawlings experience. Ed Wheatley is going to be coming in here in just a little bit to talk about the history of the glove and the game of baseball, which is celebrating 150 years. And this book is awesome. You flip through there, you can see everybody who's had an influence on defense in this game, who's won gold gloves. It's an awesome book to have.
You think Ozzie gets a mention?
No. Arenado? Yeah.
Bet he does, too.
Pretty cool. He does. Page 224. I already memorized it. I'm weird. We're going to take a break. We're going to come back. I'm a freak, man. I love this game so much. We're going to take a break. We're going to come back. We also have our Budweiser toast. Should I say who it is? I think I should say who it is, because sports tomorrow morning. That's my hint. Tomorrow morning is a very important morning in the sports calendar.
All right.
And this guest will be our toast for today, our Budweiser toast of the week. Back in a moment. It's 12:15. It's the Gas House Gang on KMOX. Gosh, we're getting a lot of comments. Keep them coming. We'll read them. We'll put them up on the screen. Back in a moment. Back on the Gas House Gang, I said we were going to put these comments up here. I don't know what got into everybody today, but boy, they are going wild on the comments. Matt says he especially loves that we're getting new heroes almost daily. I love when a team has so many contributors. I agree with that, too. There isn't one guy that you're leaning on right now with this Cardinals team. There's one after the other after the other. Lauren, can't wait to see the game this coming Monday. Good for you. They're going to be taking on Cleveland. It's fun. It's fun right now. With Chris Ranji, I'm Tom Ackerman. Matt Pajeski and Frank Ladd are our producers. And joining us in studio is the award-winning author, I would say one of our foremost baseball historians in St. Louis, if not the top. And that would be Ed Wheatley joining us in studio on KMOX's Gas House Gang. You know about the Gas House Gang.
Yeah, I do.
You
listen to it. Yeah, you got to know about it in St. Louis if you want to know anything about sports.
Yeah.
That's right.
Okay, well, I appreciate that. And, you know, we stole the name from tell us about the Gas House Gang, actually. They're the first world champions.
No.
Well, you know what I mean.
They came in the 30s.
The
26 was
26 and 31, but the first era.
It was there where you know, and I always tell people that they are a team that America fell in love with. It was during the Depression, and you know, there wasn't much else to do cuz things weren't very good during the Depression of those early 30s. And with this radio station KMX beaming across the country, that's what people listened to, the Cardinals. And here was this group of Cardinals, Dizzy Dean, Dizzy, The Lip, Ducky, I mean, you know, Pepper, all these crazy names. And, you know, up in New York, there was this stoic team, the Yankees, who had been winning in the 20s and early 30s, too, in their beautiful white pinstriped outfits. And here was this group of knucklehead baseball players, baggy, dirty uniforms. If you watch the films, and people would get, you know, if they went to the movie theater, the movie charts, they would show these clips of the Gas House Gang Cardinals, because remember they would do all the shenanigans playing Pepper, or they would had the under the legs, over the back, these rituals they would do, and people fell in love with it. And you know, they were also playing instruments with the Wabash Cannonball and all this. So this was a team that America identified with, and because of KMOX strength of signal, the nation fell in love with them. And then you had, you know, the biggest mouthpiece of baseball at the time, Dizzy Dean, and you know, his 30 wins there in 34, another World Series, and how they went with the Tigers. And you remember the fans were throwing everything from fruit and vegetables and beer bottles at Joe Medwick in game seven. They had to take him out of the game to protect him. So it was, there was all this stuff about him. It was fun.
What a crazy time that had. Can you
throw in fruit and beer bottles?
At the left fielder.
Beer bottle. Yeah.
Okay. It was out to touch. He had slid pretty hard into the third baseman.
Yeah.
But that was Ducky Medwick style.
Yeah. The Cardinals won in 26, in 31, and 34.
Correct. And then they were also, they won the pennant and lost in 28 and 30.
And of course, they won that first world championship when Babe Ruth tried to take second and got thrown out. End of series.
It was series. And that's, I tell that story in my newest book on one of the iconic gloves. A throw, a catch, a tag, and a world championship where Bob O'Farrell threw to Roger Hornsby in his Bill Doak glove, tags Babe Ruth stealing second base, seventh game of the World Series in Yankee Stadium, two outs, you're down by a run. But I went and I found all the interviews in the clubhouse right after the game. Babe, what the heck, you know, how do you get thrown? Grover Cleveland-Alexander had won game two and game six, and everybody knows how Grover Cleveland went down and kind of rested in the bullpen hanging over from the night before because he figured, I'm not going to pitch again. I've won my two games. Bob Haynes develops blisters on his with his pitching fingers from his throwing, and Alexander came in with the bases loaded in the eighth inning. Tony Lazzara, one of the most dangerous hitters in the American League, he strikes Lazzara out, and he comes in to pitch. Cardinals walk the first two guys because they're protecting this one-run lead. And they walk Ruth. Ruth's on base. Ruth was not the big, heavy, fat guy that people think. He was like a washboard in his stomach in these days. And you know, he was fast, and he had an amazing arm. But he said, with the way Alexander is hitting Bob Musial, who's now as bad, he's a good hitter, he's probably not going to get much of a hit that I can score from first base. But if I could surprise him and steal second and he gets a hit, I might tie the game. That's why Ruth did it. And, you know, if you look at it in that context, it wasn't what the fallacy that everybody kind of think, oh, Ruth was thrown out, mm-hmm. giving the Cardinals their first World Series win 100 years ago this year.
So do we talk about him being a fat guy because of the hot dogs?
You know, he was a big guy, some of the hot dogs, the beer, he inhibed later on. But, you know, Ruth was a big guy, first of all. And he had those thin legs, you know, he didn't have these muscular legs. And the biggest thing is the photography, the video of those days was not smooth. It was choppy, and it made things always look a little bit turd. But go look at that 27 Yankees and look at him and Gehrig and how big and lean they are. I mean, you got to remember, he was one of the greatest pitchers of his era and still of baseball.
The book is The Finest in the Field, A History of Baseball Through 50 Iconic Gloves. Mm-hmm. You just made mention of it when you told that story about the 26 World Series. How did you come up with this idea to celebrate America's pastime?
Well, I was working with, I've been doing some things with Rawlings, and they came and they said, you know, let's, won these awards for these different coffee tables. We'd love to have a coffee table book. So working with the Rawlings crew, we came up back and forth with ideas, and it was starting out. It starts out, everybody's love of the game. Everybody, as soon as they start talking, they'll tell you immediately, well, my first glove was this, and you know where I got it and how. And so I actually opened up the book with asking all these Gold Glove Hall of Famers, what was your first book? How'd you get your first glove? Where'd you get it? Like Johnny Bench. You know, he had to spend a summer picking cotton, you know, and that's how he got his first book. Go ahead.
You know what's amazing is you just asked that question, uh-huh. and I'm thinking about it. I don't remember my first, but I remember my second, uh-huh. and I had stolen it from my uncle. It was a softball glove, and that's just what I used. Yeah. I used that in Little League for, I mean, I don't know how long. And I imagine a lot of people, especially in our age range, who grew up mm-hmm. decades ago, have stories like that.
Oh, yeah.
Now it feels like, oh, let's go to the store and let's go to the baseball store and buy the perfect baseball glove right now because you're on a traveling team. It's a little bit different than the way it used to be.
Well, you're absolutely right. And not only is it, what was your first glove? How did you form the pocket? Did you use Vaseline lanolin, shaving cream, whatever. Did you tie it? How'd you sleep on it? And so all these guys are giving me
drive stories, over it with a car.
Yeah, you know. So these Hall of Famers are telling us how they got their glove, so that the reader all of a sudden buys in. I did it like Nolan Arenado. I did it like Ozzie. Ozzie, he didn't have a glove at first. He made a glove that he could throw and catch balls off the steps from a paper bag. And then he found eventually outside a rec center a glove that obviously was a trapeze model, had been out in the rain, and that's led him to all his greatness, starting with a glove that was a paper bag.
Wow.
And so you go into him and you buy in. I did it just like so-and-so, Brooks Robinson, whoever. And then we go into the evolution of the game, how it evolved and went across America. And, you know, the first 10 years, this is also the 150th anniversary of Major League Baseball. 1876, it was formed, the National League. And up until the late 1880s, they didn't wear gloves. And the rules were different. And then gloves came in. Rawlings put that first patent. And the first glove did not even cover the fingers. It was just the palm. It was for protection, not for catching. And the old saying that your coaches and dad instilled on you, use two hands. One hand stopped it. The other hand held it. And that's where it really all began. And then we go through the evolution of the glove, how it changed the rules in the game. Those first decade and a half of Major League Baseball, fly ball, bounce, center fielder catches it, it's an out. You could catch it on out. So there's all these rules that come in once the glove. Pitchers originally threw slightly underhand with a locked arm, kind of like throwing horseshoes. And once the catcher had a glove, he could add speed. You could throw overhand. So we go into all how the glove changed baseball and all the different rules. And then from there, I had all the Rawlings advertisements going back from the 1880s all the way up to today. So you could find your glove, whether it was the six-fingered trapeze, the Mickey Mantle model, whatever one, there it is in the catalog. That was only $8. You know, you could see the prices and just go back memories. Then we go in, we picked 50 of the greatest moments in baseball history, like Willie Mays over the head catch, 1954 World Series in the Polo Ground. Everybody knows that. There's the glove.
Wow.
Got it. The Hall of Fame was all in on this, and everybody, a lot of the Major League Baseball teams were all in on this. What do you want? Who do you need? Mickey Mantle's long, long, long run in the 56 World Series into Death Valley at Yankee Stadium to make that backhanded catch that saved Don Larson's perfect game, there's his glove. So we build these stories, and some of them are moments in a game. Some of them are parts of a career, but there's the actual gloves, you know. And just it's just like, you know, as we said, people, you'd say you're working on a glove. Well, my glove was. It's the memory and the connections. Like, you know, Nolan Arenado was telling me he got his first glove. His dad was a black model, a Derek Jeter. And he went home. He said, no, you're not going. We got to make sure your name and your phone number's in it. Well, about six times people called and says, I think I got a Nolan Arenado glove that belongs at your house. So, I mean, there's those kind of stories. And, you know, they're all pretty heartfelt. And we go all the way up to the big dumper, Cal Raleigh last year. And
his should have won MVP.
He should have.
Yeah.
But it's great. And quick, he saw a copy of the book a couple months ago. He was in town at Rawlings getting his equipment updated in some things. And he was looking at the book and, oh, wow, this is great. Look at these legends, these stories. Keep looking. What the blank? I mean, well, you know, he had a career year that was deserving. He had been the previous year's Platinum Glove winner. So defense gift. He earned the defense, and then he had the stories. He had to be in there.
Can you imagine finding out that you're in that collection? The finest in the field of history of baseball through 50 iconic gloves. Ed Wheatley is with us. Hang tight. We're going to talk to him a little bit more. Also, I want to hear about the developments of the St. Louis Sports Hall of Fame.
Okay.
I think there's some good stuff going there, and you've taken control of that. We're going to take a break. We'll be back with more. It's the Gas House Gang on KMOX right after this. Welcome back. Gas House Gang on KMOX. They're all commenting about Ed Wheatley. Eline says he'd love to hear you talk about wrestling at the Chase one day. Lawrence is asking, is the book out in stores or on Amazon yet? The book is The Finest in the Field, A History of Baseball Through 50 Iconic Gloves. Is it out?
It's out everywhere, online, book and mortar. If you really want to, we'll be next Tuesday. We'll be out at St. Louis County Library Author Series, 7 o'clock, right across the street on Lindbergh from Frontenac Plaza. Derek Gould and I, the Cardinal beat writer for the Post, he and I are going to do a conversation. We'll have books available there. And the following Saturday, the 18th, Ozzie Smith and I will be at the Rawlings Experience signing. So there's lots of opportunities. You can always pick it up in Rawlings, but anywhere you want, it's there.
Wow, that's awesome. Craig says he flipped through the book a few days ago, said it looks great, Ed. So thank you for that, Craig.
Thanks.
You know, thinking about gloves, is I remember my first glove, but I really remember my dad's. And my dad gave me his, and I still have it. And it's like pale yellow in color, you know, and it's so soft and broken in. And it's a Rawlings glove from way, way back. And it got me thinking, because I have some memorabilia. I'm not a huge memorabilia collector, but I have, you know, this signed ball or that I think would look good. We had an old seat from Sportsman's Park that we put in. I donated it in my dad's memory in the Cardinals Hall of Fame. You can see it at the Cardinals Hall of Fame and Museum when you first walk in on your right, the Sportsman's Park display. But it got me thinking, I'll bet you that you could put together a Hall of Fame of memorabilia based on what people in St. Louis have. I'd put St. Louis, especially in the area of baseball, but in all sports, up against pretty much any city when it comes to sports memorabilia and people holding on to some very special things. And it got me thinking about the St. Louis Sports Hall of Fame and how that could all work together.
Well, yeah, it's just this morning I was going through a gentleman forwarded for Browns. We get things all the time. The St. Louis Browns, they know that we're preserving the Browns, like, you know, it's a credit to St. Louis, as you spoke a moment ago. You know, there's nothing for the Boston Braves, Brooklyn Dodgers, New York Giants, Philadelphia A's. But here in St. Louis, we will have an annual luncheon once more with over 350 people remembering the St. Louis Browns. We'll sell out the Grizzlies again with our Browns night, where we dress them up in a particular year and honor a player from the team. St. Louis has that love, and with that love is memorabilia. And there's memorabilia all over this because, you know, and I've written a book saying we are the best sports town in America because of the diversity of the sports, the diversity of the athletes themselves, and the diversity of what began in sports here. You look at all the trophies that come out of St. Louis, you know, that you talk about the New York and the Heisman up at the New York Athletic Club. The Missouri Athletic Club does the Herman Awards and does the Oscar Robinson Awards, you know, for both the best college male and female soccer and basketball players, you know. Then there was the Walker Cup, the Davis Cup, the Singfield Cup. It all comes with their origins here, and it's all history. And as a part of that, you know, we've had displays here and there, and we still do, but we're announcing that we're going to be a partner of the MAC, the Missouri Athletic Club, with the St. Louis Sports Hall of Fame, where we have our regular induction dinners and many, many events. We've got some events that we'll be announcing shortly tied to the World Cup there. But we're going to have the opportunity so people can relive and see this memory and go back. And, you know, whether it was a Stan Musial glove, an Ozzie Smith glove, is it the putter that Bob Golby won at Masters, as we talk about this this weekend, or Jackie Joyner Kersee, her uniforms and outfits. So we have all these things, and it's going to be special.
Wow. Well, the reverence that people seem to have over some of these award ceremonies you're talking about, you know, the Stan Musial Awards, the amount of nationwide celebrities that show up for that, or the college basketball stuff where, you know, I had done a show there the last time I had done a show there was when right before Zion Williamson was drafted, and he was there. And I think Tony Bennett had just won a national title, and he was there. So everybody was there. Why do those things, you think, still carry weight when it seems like to the rest of the country, St. Louis is an afterthought?
Well, I think two things. One, sports is our true brand of St. Louis. You know, we were a river town. We were a beer town. We auto producer town. We were airplanes and spacecraft. But throughout all the decades, the centuries, our success are first in St. Louis sports is something that other cities look at us by. That's our beacon, is our sports. And, you know, downtown may not be what it was 10 years ago, but people flock. You know, you think about what we had, football with the Battle Hawks, and you had the hockey, and you had the Cardinals all playing on the same day. We fill up people. It's sports that is the blood. It's the thing that you can walk in, as you were speaking a little bit earlier on your show. You know, you can be at the grocery store, at the bank, and somebody said, did you see, you know, Church last, what he did last night? I mean, people will talk. It's a breaker that, you know, keeps people together. So people, I get calls about, like, last year, Babe Ruth's grandson, I brought him in. We're going to bring in Yogi Berra's granddaughter and son for a day on Yogi Berra here on June 17th at the MAC. And it's the memories. It's that feel-good moments that were feel-good parts of your life. Going back to what in the previous segment where we talked about the Cardinals and the Gas House Gang, they were kind of an opium for the depression. All these people, they, you know, they were living in their shanties and that, but they're all huddled around a radio, and who are they listening to? KMOX and the St. Louis Cardinals and the antics of Dizzy Dean. That is the memories that gets passed down. And then it was Stan Musial, then, you know, Ozzie Smith, you know, Pujols, and who's it going to be of these young kids now? Who's going to be the one? Every night it's a new one.
I love this. And to Ronge's point, we had Zion Williamson, we had Bill Walton, mm-hmm. we had Dick Vitale last year at our event, the USBWA Awards, and on Monday, Magic Johnson.
Mm-hmm. Oh, nice.
Is going to get the Dean Smith Award at the MAC. I mean, it's awesome, the people that come rolling through here. So once again, the book is The Finest in the Field, A History of Baseball Through 50 Iconic Gloves. Tell us again where people can get it.
You can get it at any bookstore, any online segment. If you want to come out, hear a good backdrop story in depth Tuesday night at the St. Louis County Library headquarters on Lindbergh across from Frontenac, or come visit us next Saturday out at the Experience. Ozzie Smith and I will be there. He's a Hall of Famer, Gold Glover. He's got his own 13 of them, and he's
ever
in the book. Yeah, so come out and see us.
Ed, great job. Really, really nice. Ed Wheatley with us. Always a pleasure to have him in studio.
Now back to the Gas House Gang.
Sponsored by Saliga Heating and Cooling. And by Overhead Door Company of St. Louis. Chesterfield Fence and Deck. And Budweiser.
On 104.1 FM, KMOX.
As a matter of fact, speaking of Budweiser, it's time for Tom's Toast, presented by Budweiser.
You got some beer over there, buddy?
I do. I got myself a cooler over here.
Oh, baby.
So can you come over? And I'm not going to throw this to you because it's a glass bottle. Look at this beauty.
I bet I could catch it.
Yeah, there you go. That's for you. I've got one for you, Pajeski, if you want one.
He doesn't need to be drinking there you go. Right now. He just
it's an ice
not
cold,
even of age.
An ice cold Budweiser. We're showing it on the screen. The king of beers. This Bud's for you. And this, our toast today is to the longtime KMOX senior golf editor. He is the one and only Dan Reardon. He has been covering majors for decades for this radio station. Bob Hyland gave him that assignment way back when. And he has been covering the Masters for many years. And the Masters gets underway tomorrow morning. Good morning. Good afternoon, I should say. Dan Reardon, how are you?
I'm doing fine, Tom. And by the way, for the record, I use neat's foot oil on my glove.
Oh, very good. Okay, nice. So he was listening. Yeah, he was listening. Well, we're toasting a Budweiser to you, Dan, and I want to start with that. Do you have the count? How many majors have you covered in your career?
Actually, I put something up on Twitter or X yesterday, and I was one off of my total. This will be my 134th major, and I can say with absolute certainty, nobody on local radio can even approach that number. There's a broadcaster out of Arkansas, Phil Schaefer, who has made it through 40 Masters, which I'm looking forward to next year. But he doesn't. He never covered the other ones with any degree of consistency. So I'm proud of that number, and I'm grateful to KMOX for the opportunity to do that.
Natural next best question is, what was your favorite one of all of them, if you have one?
Favorite major? You know, because of the relationship I had with the player, when Hale Irwin lived in St. Louis, and he won the U.S. Open at Medina, and he did it with that, you know, amazing putt in regulation to send it to a second day. You know, I just knew Hale well enough, and there were things about covering that tournament. For instance, I covered all 18 holes of the Monday playoff, and there were no cell phones, so I made a map of where all the pay phones were on the course. and I could call in on the hour and give an update on the leaderboards at that time. So that stands out in my mind from a personal standpoint. I think this anniversary of Nicholas winning the Masters probably has to be high on that list as well.
Dan is the favorite. Scottie Scheffler, number one player in the world. That has to be everybody's favorite in this tournament.
Even more so because the course we're going to encounter this week, because we know this is going to be the firmest, fastest set of greens we've seen in a long time. And Scottie is the master of distance control. You can almost write off, I'd say 75% of the field will not be able to handle the firmness of the greens more than the speed of the greens. Another 5% will fall victim to the speed. So if Scheffler is Scheffler, and he's putting that ball 3, 5, 6 feet below the hole, he could actually run away from the field. But I think the course is hard enough that there are other players who will figure it out as the week goes on. And keep in mind that Sunday, the winds are supposed to be over 10 miles an hour. And if you put 10-mile-an-hour winds on really firm, fast greens at Augusta, par will be a good number on Sunday.
We were just talking about this, and I can't remember who I was having the conversation with, but maybe it was Tom in the office the other day about the course changing. And you just kind of assume, you know, if you're viewing that, it's always the same there. But it does. There are things that do change from year to year. So how is it different from last year?
They've added a little bit of distance to, I think, the seventh hole, but not much has really changed. This has been a year where they've been pretty much status quo. You know, they're waiting to see what happens with the golf ball in the next couple of years before they decide how they're going to do that. But, you know, they don't make changes so much at Augusta. It evolves over a period of time. For instance, the first hole, they lengthened a few years ago, and they found that it created crowding in conjunction with the practice green. And so they went back and shortened it just to accommodate the flow. And that has to be said about Augusta. Their respect for the people who attend, the galleries, the patrons, is unheard of in sports. You know, we'll have the BMW here in St. Louis in August, and there's going to be media and photographers traipsing in inside the ropes all the way through that tournament. Tom, you know you've been inside the ropes. Augusta is the only tournament in golf where no one, including photographers, are allowed access inside the ropes because it otherwise would block the view of the patrons.
Wow. There's a lot of stuff, you know, no phones, low prices on concessions, just an absolute one of the, I say it every year, I'm going to go. And I think next year's the year I got to do this. Now, Rory McIlroy seems to be having the time of his life. He has finally won that. He's won the career slam. He had the dinner. He got to make it upstairs to the winner's locker room, a small locker room reserved only for Masters champions. That's incredible. How is his back feeling? Has he talked about that here lately?
Yeah, I went through his interview. He's fine physically. He admits that he's different mentally, that this is going to be a very different beginning for him because he doesn't feel any pressure. He doesn't feel the outside. And it wasn't as much the Masters as it was the Grand Slam that was pressing on him over that period of time. So he will go in a more relaxed frame of mind than he has been for a long, long time. Now, whether that produces good golf or not, I don't know. I've always said about Rory, and it wasn't true last year, all the other majors that Rory won, he won on wet golf courses because he didn't handle fast greens particularly well. But I think he's in good position. But then we have to say, you know, it's 2000, 2001 when Tiger went back-to-back, and there's got to be a reason why people don't repeat at Augusta.
Yeah, very difficult. You're right about that. Dan, we appreciate it. We'll be hearing your updates and reports throughout the tournament. The Masters in Augusta, Georgia, and our Budweiser toast to you, my friend. Thanks for all you do for us.
I enjoyed it, Tom.
With Dan Reardon, with Chris Ranji, with Matt Pajeski, and Frank Ladd, I'm Tom Ackerman saying have a great afternoon.
Goodbye, friends.
It's a beautiful day here in St. Louis. The wind slightly blowing in the Soldiers Memorial Museum.
All right, it's nap time.
Have a great day. We'll see you next time.